It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Where does the time go? If you're listening to this on Saturday, it's the day after Christmas. On Sunday, it's 2 days after Christmas. And I know that a lot of us get a lot of feedback. I can't wait for 2020 to get over, obviously, you know, because of the pandemic. But, of course, a lot of our processes that we've employed to navigate during the pandemic will continue into 2021. But here we are, day after Christmas. It's amazing how the year went by. I know to some extent, for me anyway, it's been a time warp between March 16th and June 1st. Hardly anybody was going to the dentist, and we worked with the dental community and the governor's office, you know, to work on the protocols in terms of how to safely go to the dentist. And as things have transpired, really, between July 1st and then in the end of this year, our claims are back up at the 95% level. So it is very safe to go to the dentist. And with me this weekend, not a dentist, but is the executive director and leader of the McCollop Shepherd Discovery Center, Jeannie Giralskis. And the reason why it's relevant when I was talking about all our protocols is because, like me, we are thankful that the leadership in the state, you know, came up with guidelines which helped us, you know, navigate this. So, Jeannie, this is our annual chit chat on the radio, and thanks again for joining me. And we have a lot to talk about.
Absolutely, and I'll just note that my healthy smile has a lot to do with my Delta Dental coverage over the past couple of decades.
Perfect, and and of course, with masks, we had to sort of, you know, navigate some of our commercials and things like that. But basically, we were basically trying to say you can still smile through the mask. And unfortunately, during that period of time, you know, roughly March 16th to in New Hampshire, May 11th, when dentists were limited to emergency procedures, a lot of preventative stuff was not handled. And so then it created emergency. So I'm so glad people are going back to the dentist. And you have to keep in mind that really, since the 80s and 90s, when HIV became a challenge, dentists have been expert, as has hygienists, in infection control. And I've been to the dentist several times since the pandemic hit, and it's safer than ever. It's cleaner than ever. There's no real waiting, so it is definitely you know really efficient. So Jeannie and I go way back. So back to the mid 90s. One of my first responsibilities outside of Northeast Delta Dental was then getting involved with the planetarium, the Christopher McAuliffe Planetarium, and we were looking for someone to lead it. And of course, Jeannie, then in Alaska, was selected. And here we are a quarter of a century later, and it's gone through a lot of evolutions in terms of funding and so forth. And if there's time, you know, we'll get into that. So Jeannie, quarter of a century later, here you are, you know?
Yep. And you know, we have been through a lot of changes, and I will say this past year has been one of the most challenging years, but not just for us, for everyone on the planet. So
absolutely.
I really am very thankful to Governor Sununu and his team for their leadership during the crisis. It's really nice to be one of the states that's really holding their own through this.
Yeah, and I think the willingness of Governor Sununu and his team to kind of work with all the different various stakeholders. I mentioned, obviously, the dentists and the hygienists, and then you mentioned it, but also things like in New Hampshire, we're one of the few states that have been putting on in-person road races. So Millennium Running, led by John Mortimer, worked with Governor Sununu and his team on safe guidelines for road racing. So we've had a number of road races, most recently Thanksgiving Day at Delta Dental Stadium and the Santa Shuffle a week or so later down in Manchester, where we safely conduct in-person road races. And you have to kind of envision getting onto a Southwest airline flight. Of course, no one's flying these days, but think back to pre-COVID when you did fly and you lined up and you were in a row. Well, in-person road racing during COVID, basically every runner is like 6 feet behind the prior runner. There's a starting mat, so everybody gets a real time, and you're seeded, you know, based on your time. So if you run a 5K between 17 and 20, you're going to be in the top of the list. And then if you're like me and are doing 30, and you're further back, and so there's very little passing. It's very safe. The thing we as runners miss is the camaraderie at the end, because there can't really be a lot of celebratory, you know, congregation of runners. But the point is, you know, you're right, Jeannie. In New Hampshire, we've made it work. So tell us, when this hit, obviously you have great board members, and feel free to mention them if you wish. So what was what are the first things that you did? And tell us about some of the, the pivoting as well. And I think it's important to note that, like all of us, we have found some positives in this, and it's in this kind of world that we live in. So tell us, you know, here you are, March 16th, and when sort of the egg hit the fan, what are the first things that you did?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I talked with our board, and we decided that we would close. And then we had thought we might reopen when schools reopened. I think it was like April 2, and then it was April 16, and it kept moving forward. And then we just looked at the situation and said, you know, let's just shoot for July 1 reopening. So our team, who had not ever done this before, just rose to the challenge and just started figuring out how to put our exhibits online and onto our website, and how to do programs online. So we tried Facebook Live, we tried Zoom sessions, we just we fooled around with the technology till we got the right blend of things that would enable us to be able to do our programs with NASA. We had NASA educators live, and we had our monthly Superstellar Fridays, which are usually here on site. We would have them virtually. And it took a few weeks to figure it all out. And during all of this, we had like a wonderful new addition to the team. Our director of education was out on maternity leave, had a little boy right before all of this. So she had her little new son on February 18th. And so she rejoined the team April 20th after taking time off. And so we all just worked from home.
She had the baby in the nick of time, and then welcome back.
So at our weekly Zoom sessions, because we're still doing a combination of remote and on-site work, and so little Andre joins us for all of our Zoom sessions. He's a great addition.
We see that, and that's another, I mean, really, no one wants anybody to get sick, and, you know, or certainly, you know, there's been mortality and things like that. But, you know, some of the things that have happened with Zoom, we do that as well, and we recognize, you know, that during Zoom staff meetings, and, you know, my little granddaughter is running around in the back sometimes, and everybody's in the same boat. And so that's terrific. And just as everybody may be aware of this, but at Delta Dental, we have like 250 employees, but 50 of us have been working on campus since March 16th with everybody else, three-quarters of the company working virtually. And it's worked really well, because we have these two big buildings right across the street from the Discovery Center, and the 40 to 50 of us that are here are socially distanced in two, you know, huge buildings. So that's secure. And then we quickly gave everybody the technology they needed so they can, you know, process, you know, claims from home and do everything else. So it's worked out well. It sounds like you've made many of those same adaptations.
Yeah, we have. And then we reopened July 1st. And as things would have it, it worked out just perfectly, because that's just before the state came out with guidelines on how to handle interactive museums and also movie theaters. And our planetarium was in the same category as movie theaters. So we have all these processes going on. So, like, usually we can seat 103 people in the theater, but instead we cut it down to 30 and make sure everybody is they can stay with the group they came with, but they have to be 6 feet away from any other group. And so we, you know, get the the sprays in between the visitors, and we have stations all through the museum where people can sanitize their hands and themselves, the dials on the exhibits, and so it's a lot of cleaning, but it was really hard the first few weeks of July, but at this point, it's a routine. We know how to do it. And so in the summer, we had about 20% of our usual number of visitors, but as people got more comfortable with the way a lot of museums and other public venues have handled the whole sanitization process, and the requirement to wear masks, people are feeling more comfortable. So we had more like 45% of the usual visitors over the course of the fall.
And of course, that's pretty amazing. If you think of it, you know, getting 45% of the usual number of visitors is a credit to you. And as you pointed out a couple minutes ago, I mean, you get the routine down, and this is our way of life. And even with the good news on the vaccine, by the time we get herd immunity, it's going to be probably deep into 2021. So it's just, we got the processes down. Yeah, so you're mentioning, and then we'll go to commercial break. Tell us how you were able to manage migrating school field trips to, a virtual world.
Yeah, well, a lot of the schools are not sending visitors to any place. They're having a hard enough time figuring out how to get the kids in the schools where they have hybrid forms. So we're developing a series of virtual school field trips that can be a combination of totally live conversations with educators or working with astronomy programs, or having part recorded and part live, depending on the needs of the school, because we know that it's really tough right now for teachers and parents, and so we want to be there to help. And so we're doing virtual field trips that sometimes have some kids coming into the Zoom sessions from the classroom, and then other kids coming in from home. So that we'll get about, 30, 40 kids coming in from all different places. So we subscribe to a higher level Zoom than we had before to make sure that we can meet the needs of all the kids in New Hampshire that really want to be inspired by science.
And that speaks to, again, you're pivoting in this kind of virtual world. So I'm sure we've energize the listening audience. The website is Starhop, one word, starhop.com. We're always looking for new members, other different opportunities. Again, Starhop, one word, .com. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio with Jeannie Giralskis this weekend of December 26th and 27th. And I hope everybody had a safe and peaceful holiday, probably fewer people in your household, but that we're all learning to adapt. And you heard a lot of that in the first half of the show, how the Discovery Center has made a plethora of adaptations to make sure that school children and citizens still have access to, the Discovery Center. Big shout out to my guest in last week's show, Jerry Ann Bogis from the Black Heritage Trail of New Hampshire, who talked about African-American history in New Hampshire, which is quite robust. So thank you, Jerry Ann, for educating us. So back to Jeannie. So again, in the spirit of transparency, I've known Jeannie for a quarter of a century. We live in the same town. I helped recruit her from Alaska. Delta Dental, from time to time, is a sponsor of the Discovery Center activities. And not too long ago, I had my son up here, Matt, and we took a beautiful photo right in front of the rocket ship. So if you don't know where the Discovery Center is, just drive up 93, a little bit past Concord, and you can't miss the rocket ship. And that's one thing I wanted to say to the listening audience. And Jeannie, you and I have talked about this, but here we've got this jewel, the Discovery Center, and people that have lived in New Hampshire for their whole lives sometimes haven't visited. So obviously you have to check depending on, where we are with the status of things, but it's definitely a jewel. And again, the website is Starhop, one word, .com. So tell us, one of the things you did, thanks to the Museum of Science in Boston, I think, is you had a virtual fish tank exhibit. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Yeah, and this was called virtual before everybody went virtual online, so it's actually a physical exhibit. But this is great. The Museum of Science was redoing one of their halls, and they have this really popular exhibit called Virtual Fish Tank, where it's all on computer. There's big screens with fish. You can design your own fish. You can be a predator or prey. You can decide if your fish like to school or like to go individually. And then there's little stations where you can control the feeding of the fish. You control the chasing of the other fish. And so with this Museum of Science, I was talking to some of their staff, and they were going to decommission the exhibit, and they asked us if we wanted it.
Wow.
I took a look at it. I said, absolutely. So they were wonderful. They arranged for the shipping. We got it up here. We had R&T Electric do some additional work and one dedicated
Our good team. Friends at R&T Electric. Awesome.
Yeah, they're cool. Great. And so they gave us some other, they split some of our circuits so that we could manage the electrical draw from the fish tank. And so the folks from Museum of Science showed up here and worked for a couple of days helping us get everything working. And now we've got a whole room dedicated to a virtual fish tank. Then
awesome.
We have a woman who is an underwater photographer who's a friend of our director of visitor services. And so she ended up giving us underwater photos that, like, perfectly worked with the virtual fish tank.
Wow. And
yeah.
Speaking of women, tell us about Women in Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math exhibits and that program series. As I understand it, this was courtesy of a nice grant from the Hill Foundation.
Yeah. You might see them sometimes if you watch PBS NewsHour. They're one of the funders of the PBS NewsHour. It'll say Lida Hill Foundation If Then Initiative. And what it is if you see women doing something, then you can envision, if you're a girl, you can envision yourself doing it. And so there was a national competition, and we applied and were selected as in the first round of grantees to create a series of exhibits and programs on featuring women in science, technology, engineering, and math. And so as part of it, we did a whole survey looking at our website, looking at our exhibits, of how do we currently portray women in STEM, and how do we portray girls being actively involved in it. And it was sort of surprising because we designed our own website with help from a wonderful contractor. And a lot of the pictures were of little boys doing things. And while we love the little boys doing things, we want little girls in there too. And so just doing the survey helped us realize we had to up our game on this.
Wow.
And, yeah. And then we just met a bunch of wonderful women that are working in all different aspects of STEM, from archaeology to studying the stars and working on climate change with respect to New Hampshire forests and just almost every aspect you could think of. And it includes our director of education, who is an evolutionary biologist. So when we were depicting women in STEM, she did one of our programs, and we have a picture of her with a Mongolian hedgehog from her work
Wow.
with radio tagging Mongolian hedgehogs in Mongolia and
That's great.
Learning
She's
more
the
about their life cycle.
The 2020 Charles Darwin, Voyage of the Beagle, but right here. That's
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. And so now we've got exhibits on women in STEM. We've got lots of programs. And it also surprised us when we looked at our past First Friday program series, how many of our speakers were men. So we're trying to get it to more 50-50. And over the summer, it was pretty much all women. So as part of our Lida Hill Foundation If Then Initiative.
Well, I think this is, you know, this is so important. It's bringing a huge smile to my face because one of the overall initiatives when I was, you know, on the State Board of Education was STEM in general, but also, you know, making sure that gap, you know, was fixed over time, and it sounds like you're doing a wonderful work there. So again, the website is starhop.com. Tell us about the new show or current show, Beyond the Sun, and I think it is for youngsters 6 and above. So tell us about that show.
Yeah, well, this was with the help of NASA Space Grant. We were able to license a show called Beyond the Sun. And it's about a little girl who gets visited by the moon right before she goes to sleep. And the two of them take off and start traveling past the solar system into the universe to find planets around other stars and look at all the different kinds of planets there are. So we opened that up on our Aerospace Fest, which is our annual aerospace festival. And usually we have Aerospace Fest the first Saturday in May, but of course this year that was a bad Saturday to do it. So we decided to move it to September and have it outside. And the only part of the program that was inside was the show. So we would just, you know, make sure we had no more than 30 people going in there, and we ran shows all day. But we'll be able to show this on and off over the next 3 years. So if people didn't come that Saturday, they can still have a chance to see it.
Wow. Again, the website is starhop.com. And then before we move into 2021, tell us about the Hubbard Brook ice storm.
Yeah, this is really interesting. This is a group of scientists up at Hubbard Brook Experimental Forest in New Hampshire. And they are studying the effects of ice storms because, as you will recall, if you've lived in New Hampshire for a little while, we've had some pretty devastating ice storms recently. And so they made an artificial ice storm. They just sprayed the forest with water, and it froze, and they were able to study the effects of the ice on their section, the section of the forest that they inundated with, you know, fire hoses worth of water. And so they did a program on it here and then also set up an exhibit. And the exhibit, they finished setting it up right before we had to close. So a lot of people didn't get to see it for all those months. And it had some, like, live, like they look like real people set up in there. And so when I would come into the Discovery Center all by myself, some of those days in March, April, May, June, I would just...
It would startle you, huh?
Because I would see those ice storm people and think they were really, you know, somebody had come in, and but they weren't. So once we opened in July, people were able to learn more about the ice storm and the efforts to study its effects on New Hampshire forests.
All right, let's move into 2021. Before we do, just tell us, because I got this question from some of my employee colleagues, and I just want to make sure that the citizens hear this too. So the science store, what's going on with that, and is that an opportunity to purchase some, I don't know, space theme masks or whatever?
Yeah, you know, that was when, you know, the old thing, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade. So
right.
When we first were closed, we were thinking, well, what can we do to help this whole situation? So we put everything online, and then at the same time, we investigated how we could help, and it looked like, you know, having masks would be really helpful. And we found a company that makes space-themed masks. So we asked them to help us out. And so we've got some masks with our logo on them that have the space shuttle and the NASA logo on them. And then we've got some other masks that are like a bunch of planets. So they're really cool. So this way you can stay safe and you can look cool while doing it.
Perfect. Perfect. That's really cool. I'm going to get one myself. I always, every time I talk with you, I learn stuff, I get energized. So we're kind of running out of time, but we're moving into 2021, and there's a lot we can cover, but I want to at least make sure that we spend enough time on the 50th anniversary of Alan Shepard's moon landing. So that would be approximately February 5th and 6th, as well as the, I can't believe this, but the 35th anniversary of the Krista McCullough's Challenger mission on January 28th. So why don't you take the 50th moon landing and then segue back to Krista's, and then we'll see how much time we have left.
All right. Well, I can't believe it's been 50 years, but it on February 5, 1971, Alan Shepard, our own guy from East Derry, New Hampshire, set foot on the moon. And he and his fellow explorers, one stayed in the capsule, of course, and kept things going while the other two were on the Earth. I mean, on the moon. And then, of course, that's when Alan Shepard played a little golf on the moon. So the golf balls
awesome.
That he hit are still up there, both of them. So that was February 5 and 6. And so this is the 50th anniversary of Alan Shepard commanding the Apollo 14 mission. And we think, especially during this time of COVID that's been so difficult for everybody, it's wonderful to have something to celebrate. So we've been talking with other museums and organizations around the state to try to do something statewide that where we can really celebrate Alan Shepard's accomplishment and American accomplishment of getting to the moon, and then also take the opportunity to promote some of the things that are going on in New Hampshire, like some really cutting-edge science about the moon is going on at the University of New Hampshire, so we want to promote that, let people know more. So we thought we would do some in-house programs where we would upgrade our lunar exhibits that we created for the 50th anniversary of the first moon landing to add more both about Apollo 14 and Alan Shepard's trip up there, but also to include more information about NASA's plans to have women and men actually living on the moon. And then, as a lot of people might know, Alan Shepard went to Pinkerton Academy. So we're going to be, Pinkerton Academy is going to be involved in this initiative.
Wow.
And then he used to ride his little bicycle down to what is now Manchester Airport and watch the planes coming in and out. And that's where he got his idea about wanting to learn to fly.
Yeah.
So the Aviation Museum down at the Manchester Airport is going to be
which we have featured on this show, and that's terrific. So that's I can't believe it is 50 years. I mean, I can still remember 1969. So we've got about a minute. So just quickly tell us what you have in mind for the Krista McAuliffe event on January 28th.
Yeah, well, January 28th is a Thursday, which is a day we're not typically open. So we're going to be doing some virtual programs, but we're also going to go through what we have in our archives and put some things on display. And they're unusual things, like she was involved in a Girl Scout roundup in the Dakotas and back when she was, you know, a teenager. And some of the people who were at the roundup with her have given us some pictures of the event and information from the event. She got little pictures of Krista as a teenager there. And so with some other things that we have here in the museum. We've got we got a new National Endowment for the Humanities grant to do some work on organizing our collection because we're kind of an accidental museum. We never meant to collect things. We were going to be more of a science center where you just build everything, but the community has brought wonderful treasures to us, so it's converted us into a science museum.
Exactly.
Where we have an actual collection.
Yeah, we don't call yourself an accidental museum. We call it a strategic museum.
Yeah, okay.
So those two dates are January 28th, the 35th anniversary of Krista McAuliffe, and the 50th anniversary of Alan Shepard's moon landing, February 5th and 6th. You can go on starhop.com for more information. So listening audience, you know, whether you're an individual citizen, whether you make decisions on corporate philanthropy and you're working for your employer, Jeannie does a great job. She does it strategically frugal. So we always need help with generating operating support and replacing technology and upgrading seats and servers at the planetarium, and as well as the science playground. So please, there are opportunities to become members, to donate. Just go on www.starhop.com. Jeannie, thank you for your leadership, and you yourself are a treasure in New Hampshire. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Tom. That's wonderful to say. You are too.
All right. And everybody, I hope everybody had a safe holiday past, and hopefully a peaceful new year on January 1st coming right up. And I know it's going to take a little while, but 2021 will turn the page for us.